Hi everyone, I'm Mo Perkins and today I'm talking to Joy Langley. Joy is a CBT therapist and coach and she's the thought catcher. A very warm welcome to you, Joy, and thank you for joining us.
Hi Mo, nice to hear from you and thank you for inviting me on your show.
You're really welcome. I can't wait to hear more about you. Joy, I know that you coach professional men that hit the wall. Can you tell us a little more about your journey leading up to developing this particular niche? Because it's your niche is so interesting, but I'd also like to hear sort of how you got there.
Yes, but by all means, Mo, I shall tell you it all. So I'm a therapist and I trained as a person-centered counsellor, which for those of you that may not know what exactly that means, it's the conversational thing that goes on between a client and the therapist, and really is to help you to move from an issue that you may have to a solution. And person-centered counselling is a way of just having a good conversation with people, I think. I then went on later on, probably quite a few years later on, to learn CBT. And that's a very different way of working with clients. It's more practical, it's very hands-on, and I think it helps people to move on very quickly in a short space of time. So I've taken to it, my clients seem to love it, which is brilliant. The coaching aspect of what I do, Mo, that's really way before I even became a counsellor. I did a coaching course, which I loved, and it was brilliant. And it was mainly about moving from the present into the future. So it kind of worked on the principle that you don't have to look back at your life. And that felt a bit strange for me because I had so many things, limiting beliefs, one of the favorite things that people like to say, holding me back. And I thought, well, I do need to feel more confident about working with people. And actually, their problems are not just always about working from where you are now and moving forward. So hence the counseling came in.
That's really interesting. So one thing I've learned there is you were a coach before you were a counsellor.
I would say so, yes. I wouldn't say it was full-time, though. It was for probably a year and a bit, and I did the training. I worked with some other coaches, so we could, you know, you both tend to co-work with therapists or counsellors while you're in training, so I did that. But yes, the coaching aspect was interesting.
So that's great. That's really interesting. Could you tell us more, Joy, about the emotional skills training for men that you've developed?
Oh, of course, yes. And that's a very recent thing. So through the therapy work and through working with men, I've sort of noticed that they have issues, just as the women do, and some of the young people that I see as well. But it always feels slightly different. I always feel as though men are a little bit more stuck and sometimes not as able to express what's happening for them, and perhaps a little bit surprised that they found themselves in an emotionally distressed place. So what I've been doing in the last year is working on developing a course called Emotional Skills Training for Men. And really it's to provide a way through for men to face up to the fact that they have problems, and if not talk to someone face to face, at least go online and do it anonymously and just educate themselves. So that's really a work in progress, Mo, with a view to getting a course out earlier on this year.
Wow, well I hope you get that course going because it sounds brilliant. And I agree with you that it often men do find it more difficult to express themselves, although of course they have just the same problems that any of us women have. But is there anything in particular that sparked your interest in working with men?
I think I just found that as a group, you know, when I see men, I feel that they take more to, I suppose, CBT ideas. That's one of my, because I like CBT, I suppose, I found that men definitely took to the more practical aspects of things. Once you tell them how to do something, it's almost becomes very easy to follow through on. So that I quite liked. And then I got very interested in learning about areas of, I suppose, how bad it can go for men if they hit a low mood, depression or anxiety. I'm talking about that point where they commit suicide. So, you know, big topic, Mo, but really it kind of opened my eyes up a little bit more to the statistics and to the UK statistics, plus also the international ones. And that men, I think the figures might be, is it three times more, Mo? You know just as much as I do. Three or four times more prone to have what I call a successful outcome when they decide they don't want to be here. And I thought, why is this? You know, and I started looking into, do men have any friends that they talk to? Because women, we tend to talk to each other, Mo. But who do men talk to?
Well, absolutely. You know, sometimes they, you know, some of them play it out through sports or activities, don't they? But you're quite right. They don't tend to use their networks in quite the same way that we do.
Exactly. And this whole thing about networks was a big thing, because I think with us both being females, we're probably very used to tapping into a network of supportive female friends, and even male friends as well, because women do that. We know about networking. We know it's important within reason to share stuff. And it's kind of a blanket statement, a generalization that all women do it. I'm sure there are some that don't. Okay. But on the whole, I find that women are able to express themselves and they're not afraid to find someone to share it with. Men, you're quite right. This thing about throwing themselves into activities, throwing themselves into their work, perhaps pretending that nothing bad's really happening, and getting into like bad habits, like drinking alcohol, getting into drugs, you name it, whatever covers up the pain that they might be feeling.
Yeah, you're right. Did I catch you right in you saying that your training is going to be delivered online?
Yes, Mo, online. I thought, well, I see people face to face, and there's a limit to really how many people I can help really in that way, because it all relies on them either being in front of me or obviously getting on Skype as well. But that takes up time, and there's only a limited amount of time that I'm around before I get kind of worn out. So I thought to myself, how about delving into the whole world of online courses? And there are loads of them out there, and I thought, oh my god, this is a world that I wasn't even that familiar with, but I'm going to get myself familiar with it. And that's what I've been doing, following an online course about how to deliver an online course, which is very interesting. But it's fascinating. The learning curve that I'm going through at the moment, Mo, is just, you know, it's so stressful, but the outcome will be that I'll have something that I hope a population of men who are willing to explore what's happening for them in more detail, they'll have the opportunity to do that.
Well, I'm giving you a big high five, Joy, because I've last year I created an online course, so I know how challenging it can be, but also how rewarding it is when you've actually got that course out there. And I agree with you, it's a way to really leverage your time and make contact with so many more people who you would never be able to see directly in your consulting room, you know, or even using Skype. There's only so many hours, you know, so it's a really good way to go about it. Have you got a start date for your course?
I do have a start date. I'm looking at the end of April, so I'm hoping I will be up to speed by then. I'm looking at my website at the moment, trying to develop that, make sure I'm saying what I need to say, and then all the other technical things in the background that you need to make the online course work. So I'm not a technical person, Mo. I find it all extremely challenging, but given that I encourage my clients to try new things and to work out what they're trying, what the obstacles are and how to overcome things, I'm trying to use myself as a little bit of a guinea pig and be in that place where things are just, I'm just tearing my hair out, basically. It's frustrating.
Oh, well, don't tear your hair out. You know me now. You know someone that's been there and done that. And if I can help you in any way, I will.
That's great, Mo. Thank you.
But it's really, really interesting to hear. And I hope that we get a chance to talk more about it. But just like me, you're active in both coaching and counselling circles. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on the differences and the similarities between coaching and counselling. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting field. I think the similarities are that they're talking to people. And for me, in a way, it doesn't matter what the conversation is that two people have as a dialogue, as long as it helps the other person to find a solution, then it works. Okay, but coaching tends to be a conversation where, as I said, you're not going to be delving too much into the past. So you're not going to be looking at your childhood history and why things happened and all that kind of analysis. Coaching tends to look at you where you are now and moves forward into the future. So it's very strict. It's about making goals, being quite strategic, and coming out with baby steps that help you to get there. So that's how I sort of view coaching. I don't know if you agree with me, Mo.
I do agree. I think there's a great overlap between coaching and counselling, actually. You know, I think there's big areas of overlap, but there are also some differences as well. But, you know, I'm always interested to ask that question.
Yes. Well, I can answer the bit that you wanted. What's the difference with the counselling? You know, for me, counselling is, it's got more depth to it in that you do look into people's history. You do look at their childhood interactions. And it's really trying to look at what makes the person who they are today. And that happens in terms of conversations with people. And obviously strategies that as a person-centered therapist, you would be using. But it does allow someone a lot of freedom to direct, I would say, the conversation. I find that the coaching can be a very direct thing that I will tell you and stop you and let you go where perhaps I want to go. And that's perhaps a style. And with the CBT therapy that I've taken on board, again, I like the directness of it. And I like the fact that you have practical strategies that you can apply to your life. Like now, you know, once you've seen me, you can go away and you can start thinking about it or start using it. And for me, it's changing the thought process. So CBT, for me, I was just fascinated, Mo, that it changes your thoughts.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's all fascinating. And one of the things I think is fascinating is that with counselling, you know, some people go into the client's history, some people don't. Some people use very practical strategies, some people don't. And with coaching, you know, some people do more talking, some people ask lots of questions. I just think there's so much of an overlap. It's just something I'm always just really interested to have a little chat about.
Yes, and you're right about the different styles. I think it's one of those things in life where it comes down to the personality of the therapist or the personality of the coach. Because I think it's important to play to my strengths. So I will end up, you're quite right, administering stuff and talking to people in a way that matches me. So counselling kind of suited me, but it didn't suit me. Mm-hmm. I find that coaching and CBT suits my personality a lot more.
And I think you're right. You know, I'm sure there's a paper in it somewhere as to, you know, how our personalities define the kind of model that we use. But that's for another day.
Yes. And Mo, you are the perfect person to write that, because I know you do an awful lot of writing for some of the counselling magazines as well.
Joy, now I know you've achieved a lot since you first got into coaching and counselling, and I would certainly describe you as successful, but I'd love to know what your personal definition of success is.
That's such an interesting question, Mo. Success, what is success? Okay, I think I define myself as successful now because my self-esteem and my confidence are reasonably high, and I know how to fix it when it starts, you know, dwindling. But I must admit, growing up as a young girl and going to university and achieving a qualification and then not getting the job that I wanted, I stopped defining myself as successful for a huge chunk of my life. It felt like possibly 20, it was like 15 to 20 years, Mo, of not knowing that I am actually quite amazing and quite successful. I was defining it by work, and I was defining it, I suppose, by money. And because as I've gotten older, I've realized those are not necessarily the measures that I should be looking at. So now, with the maturity, I suppose, I can look back and realize that I have always been successful. Because for me, success is about being able to wake up in the morning, get yourself out, possibly, and about, do something useful, talk to someone, help someone, and then come back. And that is a very small definition of success. It doesn't necessarily involve money, doesn't necessarily involve material, the acquisition of material possessions. it's about you and hopefully your interaction with one other person, and it's positive.
I love your definition, and I think that for many of us in the coaching and counselling fields, it's not really about money. It's about helping people. It's about personal freedom, to be being able to live the kind of lifestyle that we want as well, which, you know, is often about independence. And also, there's a lot of online coaching now, I mean, as we've been discussing, and that has the chance of giving us the freedom, actually, to be more mobile as well while we're working.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the old-fashioned idea of having to be in front of someone is great. And I personally, I love working face-to-face with people. I think I'm at my most energetic, for want of a word, Mo. But I've also realised that when you talk to people via Skype, funnily enough, it's pretty close in terms of satisfaction. And I didn't realise that talking to people on the phone would bring me any satisfaction at all, because I can't see them. But it works too.
Yeah, it does. It does. And like you, I feel exactly the same. I feel almost as though I'm at my best when I'm in the room with somebody and they can kind of feel my energy, you know. But
yes.
Also, the amount of people that we can be in the room with is small, and the world's a big place, and there's a lot of people out there that want to, you know, hear your message and do what you do and learn from what you do. So I think we're also, I think our energy can come across in other ways. It's, you know, it's but I still love being in the room with people. I don't see this, I can't imagine not doing that, you know, at any point in the future soon anyway.
You're so right.
I've got another nice little question for you
here. Oh, go for it.
I'd love to know what the biggest challenge that you face in your business or your work right now is.
The biggest challenge for me, I suppose, is making sure that my business is super successful. So I mentioned what my definition of success was, but success, one of the success, let's get my teeth in properly here, Mo. One of the success measures that I'm using right now is building a very secure income, one that can sustain me into my old age. So a pension, I suppose. So money is one of my markers now for success. So that challenge is where I've been looking at what else can I do? What products or what services can I create? And the online course really is me as well as being working with people. It's also about creating a steady stream of income, which I can rely on as well, and doesn't require me to be, you know, in 1,000 different places.
Yeah, that's true. So, and your biggest challenge is about...
Right now, it's just making sure that I become a really good business person and I understand the technical side of what's required to develop products. So it's becoming a better marketeer as well. And also just, as I said, getting on top of the technical issues, which in a way they hold me back. But I'm not letting them get in the way too much. I'm working out how to find other people to support me.
And yeah, one of the interesting things I always think is that a lot of us in the counselling and coaching field never really were taught anything about business or marketing, unless we come from that kind of background. You know, it's quite a steep learning curve for us, isn't it?
Don't start me on that one, Mo, because if you start me on that one, I'm not going to finish. because I have my, you know, but then I, okay, so the training doesn't teach you business acumen, and one of the discussions that I have with friends quite often is that why should it? And I thought, well, I suppose, yeah, why should it teach us business acumen? If I learn any other, you know, particular skills, do they teach you business acumen? If I become a dentist, does that teach me a business acumen? If I become a lawyer, does it teach me business acumen? And I thought, well, okay, fair enough, in that comparison, then fair enough. But I think because counselling is something you go out there and you set up as a private practitioner, you know, 9 times out of 10, and the problem is how do you know how to run a business? Do you know anything about running a business? Do you know anything about marketing? You know, it just becomes something which you go out there in the world all bushy-eyed and bright-eyed, and then you do hit something which is like, what do I do next and why isn't it working? And I thought it would be easy. I spent 4 years of training, or 5, whatever it might be. I spent X amount of pounds, and you kind of expect to hit the floor running, which, you know, was the biggest surprise for me, Mo, that I've spent X amount of pounds training to be something, and it's like nothing happens at the end. I thought, well, where is the pot of gold?
I know.
The pot of gold, where is it?
I'm not going to get you started anymore on steep learning curves and marketing.
Thank you.
Don't get me started either, because
I'm
really climbing that very steep hill at the moment.
Yes.
So one of the things I am aware of with regards to your business is I know that you use LinkedIn, and I just wondered, what are the methods you use to promote your training and your business?
Wow. I love LinkedIn. I mean, I really do like that platform. I've also got a Twitter account and I've got a Facebook account, which I've not been using as much as I should do, but I am using them because I'm very, very much aware of social media. And I also realize that a lot of therapists do not think it's appropriate to have social media accounts. Mo.
I know. What's your view on that one?
Oh, what's my view on that? Well, they just should really get with the program. That's all I can say, Mo, and realise that they're in the 21st century.
And oh, my goodness.
It's part of business. I'm just going to go.
I was just thinking the phrase, we're in the 21st century now.
Yeah, please. But I get the problem is that we're trained to almost be, I suppose, very low-key and invisible, and we're trained to say things like, oh, well, if I bump into my client in the supermarket, I'll just walk straight past them. And it's like, why would you do that? Would you do that in real life? Would you walk past someone in real life? No, you'd say, at least, raise an eyebrow or a smile and continue. I get that we don't necessarily want to embarrass our clients by giving any kind of indication to other people in their circles that they're having therapy if they don't really want anyone to know. I do understand that. But there are some things which we're taught, which I've just overturned. I'm like, why was I taught that? But, I'm okay-ish with it. And the social media, don't get me started, because this is about visibility. It's about us almost having to be invisible. And, of course, social media is about being visible.
It is. It's definitely about being visible. And I think it takes some courage to get out there and be visible and to also establish yourself on social media in a way that still feels true to your professional roots, but also, like we've mentioned, does take you into the 21st century. And I think, I feel that some of the things that we were taught, I don't really think serve our community that well. And I don't think they really serve the people that are out there looking for us that well, because how can they find us if we're invisible?
Exactly. It doesn't serve us as, business people. And despite, some people's discomfort at being called, some therapists, let's say, discomfort at being called a business person, that is what you are. You're running a business, and it doesn't serve the people who need our assistance and our help and our advice and anything else, because you're right, they can't find us.
Absolutely. You're right. I honestly agree with you. I didn't know I would agree with you as much as I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, no, I'm just one of those people. I know so much and I know so little.
Is there anything in your business that you wish you could have done differently?
Wow, let's think. I'm not sure about that. I think the one thing I would have wanted would have been the direction in terms of building a business, a therapy business. And I do have a couple of friends who do that. I've come across people who do that. And I know that we have our own training organisation. We have the body, the British Association of Counselling Practitioners, so the BACP. They're out there doing their stuff. And I have met people that teach you about business through that too. So perhaps people are waking up, but really and truly, it doesn't serve me to send me out there with no knowledge of how to run my business, my therapy practitioner. But I can't point the finger at anyone, because perhaps you just have to realise you need to do it and then find the right outlet, find the right teaching and training courses.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, many counsellors are generalists, really, and work with all issues, whereas a lot of coaches tend to specialise and develop a niche. And, I mean, you've developed a niche for yourself, and I wonder, what's your view on the generalist versus specialist debate?
I think being general sounds like a good idea at the beginning. But the more you study marketing and the more you understand perhaps even yourself, specializing has to be the way to go. Did you mention niching your business?
Sorry, what was that? Just repeat.
Did you mention about, sort of like bringing your business down to a point where you're specializing on one thing, so niching it, putting it into a very small bracket of who you might be attracting or the group of people that you want to talk to?
Yeah, I mean, I've focused a lot of my energies recently around a parent-child relationship.
Exactly.
And training therapists to work with the parent-child relationship. And so really, my niche is really anything related to the parent-child relationship. But of course, like you, over the years, I've worked in so many different areas and I've developed so many different strings to my bow that, there's lots of things I love doing. But I think that there comes a time when it really is useful to have a niche, and particularly if you want to develop a product. If you want to develop a product like an online course or a workbook, you have to know exactly the audience that you're speaking to.
I think I have to agree with you 100%, Mo. That is the reason being a generalist in anything in life is not terribly appealing. So let's say you were looking for shoes and you went to a shop that says shoe shop, but you're a woman, you're looking for shoes, and you went to, it says shoes above the, the sign. You go inside and there's lots of children's shoes. Yeah. And you think, oh, they could have been a bit clearer, couldn't they? So you're more likely to go into a shop which clearly perhaps has ladies' shoes or men's shoes or has them on display in the window, because then you're very, very clear on that person or that particular retailer is going to meet my needs. And I think as therapists, it's one thing being generalist. We know that we can, within reason, talk to anyone about anything, but that doesn't help the client to find someone who really meets their needs. It's one of those things, being a jack of all trade and master of none. And as consumers, we've been trained to look at specialists. We've been trained to go to someone because they're the expert in their area. So we're kind of doing ourselves a disservice.
And of course, once you've got a niche, you don't have to have only one niche. You there's nothing to stop you developing a niche. And then you do finish. Is there anything more you'd like to add?
Not really. I think I've said a lot, actually, Mo, more than I thought I would say. I'm not sure your audience, who that's going to be, because then I can perhaps direct my last words at them. Is it therapists I'm talking to?
We'll be talking to therapists and coaches, both.
Right, okay.
And also maybe some practitioners who work with children and parents who may not actually particularly call themselves therapists or coaches. So, for example, you get a lot of people that work in schools with children and so on. So, could be, I generally call them just practitioners.
Okay, fine. Okay, well, I do have some, final words then about practitioners. Really, I think, remember why you're doing what you're doing. Remember what your calling is, for want of a word. Why you enjoy talking to people. And that's really what it's about. You enjoy doing it, so you'll do it. Then also remember that it's about making a connection with people. So you're quite right, regardless of, whether you've got a certain qualification in one area or another, I find that as long as your heart's in the right place and your intention is to move someone from A to B or to help them to find a solution, and you click in a way when you're with someone in the room, then you're doing the right thing. You get a good feeling, they get a good feeling. It's kind of a win-win.
Absolutely. So thank you, Joy, for talking to us. It's been absolutely great. It's been so interesting. I've really enjoyed finding out more about what you do and your work with men and your ideas about things. We're definitely on the same page, so I'm hoping that I'll get to talk to you more. So to find out more about Joy and her emotional skills training for men, you can email Joy at joy@catchathought.co.uk, or you can go to www.emotionalskillstrainingformen.com, and that's the number 4. You can grab the free tip sheet and learn a whole lot more. If you have any thoughts or questions about our discussion today, be sure to leave a comment. Joy and myself would love to hear from you, and the website address will be in the text, so no need to worry if you didn't get a chance to catch it. So it's good vibe from Mo. Let's make a difference.